This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Legion Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Legion on FX. I'm Jason. I like saying that.
And I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
This is the Legion Podcast Episode 2. Welcome, everybody. Before we get started, I just wanted to ask you guys, which exhibit would you visit in the museum of your own minds?
Oh, boy. Probably, I think maybe the ancient Roman one.
Your past lives.
I'm sure I have some like genetic memories built in.
We talked about this on the Black Mirror podcast. I think I would just obsessively go replay it. You know, like those hot memory stove things where you burn your brain on a hot memory stove and you think about like sometime where you were humiliated or you felt like a total asshole. I like to go back and watch those moments and see was I really the asshole?
Right. Yeah,
or
me
what's
too.
Those Eric, our buddy Eric calls those shame over.
Where it just kind of changed your energy signature for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Like that third grade teacher that scolded me for taking 2 towels out of the bathroom instead of 1. Like, you know, is that really worth me thinking about 32 years later?
Right. And now I never use towels ever since then.
Right. I just wipe them on my jeans.
Or you can go back to the time when your dad read you The World's Angriest Boy.
Exactly. Is this right here the moment that I was fucked up?
I think it was called, what was it? The World's Angriest Boy in the World.
That is what he said, and I thought that was a joke, but you might be right.
Yeah, I freeze-framed the cover.
Oh, boy.
I would love, yeah, I would go back to the really traumatic moments and just to, I mean, kind of do what they were doing, this little, like, Scientology thing in the where you relive the traumatic moments until they don't affect you anymore.
Yeah, I'm glad we weren't the only ones, because I'm like, are they hooking him up to an e-meter? Is this like, you know, yeah. Next question they're going to ask is, what is your bank account number?
Exactly. You should know, Aaron. Okay, I'd also go back to some really, really, I would watch the play that I was in college, because we never videotaped that, and I want to see what it looked like from an outsider's perspective. Anyway, let's get into our top 3 highlights. So it's the top 3 highlights for Season 1, Episode 2, Chapter 2. All of these episodes are named Chapter whatever, which I feel like is sort of uncreative, but maybe there's some reason.
Everybody's
for it.
It's the hot thing right now.
Oh, yeah, but it's kind of lame. I'm with you, Jason. I think, you know, it doesn't make a particular episode stand out in your mind.
Because right. Noah Hawley spent so much creative energy coming up with Buridan's ass and all the other crazy Fargo titles. He's like, you know what? Chapter 1, Chapter 2.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read Plato's Cave again for some kind of choice quote.
Maybe it did sour him on the whole thing.
It could. Because a lot of people obsessed over that stuff, too. Yeah. Maybe he gave him the wrong idea. So he's like, you know what? Just want the show to stand on its own.
Could be. All right. Who wants to go first? Number 3.
Can we talk about how this second episode is essentially Empire Strikes Back?
Okay.
The young Jedi begins his training. He sees a vision of his sister being potentially abducted and tormented. He flies off and just, I'll come back and complete the training later. And, you know, Sid's all like, oh, you must finish your training, you must. And he's like, nah, I don't got time for it, Obi-Wan.
He's baiting you into a trap. Like, like, all of it.
Like honestly, I kind of wish in that elevator scene where she's like tempting him with her gloved hands that he was wearing like a complete khaki outfit just so But I got very strong Empire Strikes Back vibes off of this.
Yeah, the first half of Empire, we have to see the confrontation that he's not prepared for next week then.
Yeah, like right. Is he going to meet the eye in a carbon freezing chamber?
in a hair salon, and he's going to go toe-to-toe.
Or is he
going to
free
hair?
Lenny from her carbon freezing wall or whatever stucco wall? Like, she's not dead, she's just in a suspended hibernation?
It does make me look at Yoda and Luke's relationship a little differently.
Hold hands we can if you stay.
I ought to.
Right.
On the table a handy is.
There is no try.
Yeah. But that struck me is how similar the structure was.
Mm-hmm. There's also a little bit of Matrix in there.
Ooh, lots of
in,
Matrix.
In some of their... just the way they delivered lines and this kind of idea of opening your eyes to the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Definitely feeling like Matrix.
What if I told you?
Also, his therapist glasses, very much Morpheus-esque. Just no. What are the legs of the glasses called to keep them on your ears?
Sure. The legs.
The legs. The glasses. He had no legs on his glasses.
It was legless, just, rimless.
He's a telekinetic.
Noseless, yeah.
Right, he wastes his power keeping his glasses on
there
his face.
There you go. Oh man, is that like Wolverine? Like that's like Wolverine. His mutant healing factor is famously kept at bay by the adamantium poisoning in his body. Like like if this guy would stop trying to keep his glasses on his face, he could like move the world.
Yep. Or at least an X-wing.
I think. Yeah, and you know we keep coming up with different things to compare the show to or influences, and that sort of feeds into it, or at least you could see it that way, because it's about this scattered guy who's got all these voices in his head. The show has voices in its head.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my one of the things that I wanted to talk about is this sort of examination of his memories. I'm actually really liking it. It's kind of reframing all of the things that we saw in the first episode and didn't understand. And now they're kind of taking him back through a tour, and he thought that the drugs were making him see things. He thought he was schizophrenic and that's why he's seeing things. Turns out that a lot of this is the manifestation of his power.
Yeah. It must be said that you were 100% right. And I was 100% wrong. It seems like all of his alleged craziness, and we don't use that word here.
Right.
All this alleged cuckoo cachoo is all from his mutant powers.
That's better. Makes him feel.
That's the clinical term.
Yeah.
Cookie crap. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it is. But that actually leads me into my point, which is that Melanie's trying to convince him or telling him he's not sick and it's all just his power. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Here, the dictionary definition of schizophrenia, it says it's a long-term mental disorder of a type involving a breakdown in the relation between thought, emotion, and behavior, leading to faulty perception, inappropriate actions and feelings, withdrawal from reality and personal relationships into fantasy and delusion, and a sense of mental fragmentation. So we know now that he probably is not at all delusional and all this stuff is just a manifestation of his powers, but it still did cause some of that. So I wouldn't say he's probably clinically schizophrenic, but he's got some problems. And same thing with Sid. She doesn't really want to touch people now, even with her gloves. And that probably would have never happened if she didn't have this power. But the fact is that she's got some anxiety. And I think Noah Hawley likes playing with that. And I think Melanie is a little bit on the optimistic side. But it's interesting. I mean, to think about the parallel with actual mental illness. Like, I think a lot of great art was probably had something to do with manic behavior or psychosis or even, you know, of course, we know hallucinogenics and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so the instinct is to just blunt all of that with drugs. And it's a hard question. I mean, people suffer, but it's also not just necessarily the right thing to consider it something that needs to be tamped down. So I don't know, kind of all over the place with this, but
Well, I think, and also, like, even though I gave Jim props for predicting correctly what's going on, I also want to push back a little bit and wonder, like what you were saying, are we sure we're out of the mental illness woods? Because, you know, as you said, like, the trauma from these things happening to him could give him some kind of clinically diagnosed condition. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you're also right, Jim, that the yellow-eyed devil or whatever is probably another mutant, perhaps even the eye, that's trying to infiltrate his mental defenses in some way. But it's also, that could just be an out-and-out delusion as well.
Maybe. I think they're doing a lot of stuff to really kind of mess with the notion of this guy's power and just how mentally ill he might be, because even down to like the stuff that almost seems like a cruel joke, like when he's in this scanning machine, right, this MRI-esque sort of scanning machine, and this Carrie guy keeps going on and on talking to another Carrie,
right?
Well, we know that there is actually in fact another person over on the other side of the room that David can't see. Uh-huh. And this just feels like a cruel joke.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hilarious. Yes. That the show is doing that, but also it's kind of mean.
Yeah. But also the interlude where the lights went dark and he was left alone in the MRI machine and then the yellow-eyed devil snuggled in the tube with him. Mm-hmm. Did that really happen? Did Carrie just like decide to check out and like shut the lights off, or did David's panic over the anomaly or whatever was disturbing Carrie trigger him to have what I would, I guess, describe as a mutation-fueled psychic break?
Right.
Or psychotic break, mm-hmm. rather.
And the thing with him is he's immensely powerful and he's mentally scattered and he can actually, like, physically manifest things. So... He right. can change reality around him, which is really scary.
That's true. Yeah. And teleport matter,
mm-hmm. and apparently erase doors, and you know, all kinds of shit.
Yeah, he can manifest giant volume knobs that he turns in midair until the singular voice in the room is David Firestein saying, "David,
that's right,
David,
find the one voice. You need to contact my lawyer and my mother. You know what?" Screw my lawyer.
And yes, we are going to make this joke every episode until the very end.
Until they change his name from David, yeah. So I another thought that I had is I don't have to wait long for my frog smoker mystery to be resolved. We now have the blue the blue fog frog,
mm-hmm.
Which is apparently seemingly a wasteful way of getting high, but it's their way of getting high. Mm-hmm.
Just strap a bag to it, catch that vapor,
and
enjoy at your leisure.
See, I don't live in California, so I don't know how this all works, Jason, but I assume that you just get like a bale of marijuana and you light on fire and you set a fan in front of it and you just, you know, catch what you can, right? That's how you use drugs that are administered a drop at a time.
I mean, I think the inefficiency of the frog vaporizer is balanced out by how trippy and cool it looks.
Yes.
So
I didn't realize that its eyes lit up until this episode.
And I'm not even sure that they did light up. I wonder if that's just an effect of the blue fog, you know? Like, maybe. Oh my God, is that frog's eyes electric now?
But they looked over like they were in shock at what it was doing, when really it was just that the drugs were ready. Mm-hmm. I like that. They're like, oh,
I like that whole sequence because it reminded me a lot of like Aubrey Plaza and him running around trying to sell this stove that they scammed off. Something. It reminded me a lot because I'm in the middle of rewatching The Wire. It reminded me a lot of like Bubs and his various scams, mm-hmm. where like, you know, he's always like trying to steal copper wire or make off with ambulance supplies or, you know, what, like, are we next going to see him telekinetically lever, you know, lift the blue vial from a drug dealer. Like, I thought that was pretty funny. What does she call the stove? It's the glue or the
utility
player.
Yeah
because you can cook things on, you can heat,
you can
commit suicide,
light things up, right? That's not, yeah, that's a great way to convince somebody to take your stove. You want me to kill myself?
I like that stove, though. It had the three-prong outlet up the front, you know, in case you want to do your ironing as well. If you want to plug in, why do you need a three-prong outlet on a stovetop? Dry your hair at the same time?
That's a good question.
Plug in your blue fog frog, you know? so much utility.
We also learned that she finger bangs other girls.
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
So she definitely was not jealous. Oh,
well, she
might have been jealous because she had the angle on Sid. And then David came in there. So I thought maybe she's jealous of David, but she might have been jealous of Sid.
Right. Or she could just be, you know, willing to do anything to get a stove to trade for blue, whatever.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Desperation. Okay, I've got a number two here.
Go for it.
One that I'm just going to call time travel class has been canceled. Did anybody else hear that in the background?
No.
Alan Sepinwall mentioned something about in his review, so I don't think you imagined it.
I mean, maybe this show is driving me insane. That's the substitute word I'll use for crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so time travel class has been canceled. When does this show take place? I know I kind of asked that in the first episode, but this really confused the issue because you look at the therapist's office, and this therapy session couldn't have been more than 10 years ago.
I think they said six, yeah.
Six years? Okay.
Something like that.
So it's really confusing because he has a very retro scheme, and then you look at, like, the stuff that Carrie was operating, the computer equipment. And I can't believe that that's the most efficient way to get your job done, is to string together old typewriters and old tube monitors and just all this ancient technology hooked up to this modern-looking MRI.
Well, but that's kind of Matrix logic, right?
Mm-hmm.
You like to, in a stand-in for, like, crazy future tech, you actually go, like, little steampunk with it to, you know, because it future-proofs it.
Yeah, and I mean, It's definitely cool. Like, I'm kind of using this as a springboard to talk about the style of the show,
uh-huh.
because I actually really like the style a lot, right. especially when he's in that scanner and they're kind of using it as a wipe back and forth between shots.
Uh-huh.
That was a really cool effect.
Yeah. Oh, no. And again, this continues to look top shelf. I was particularly blown away by the lighting in the scene where he thinks he hears her say, "I'll protect you."
Mm-hmm.
Like, they go to this, you know, idyllic glen that's overlooking a lake, I think, and like they got the magic hour lighting just so, and it's coming through all the vegetation. I thought that was like just unbelievably lovely. And as you say, mm-hmm. they get really creative with the wipes and transitions, and
it's the show's almost Mad Men-esque in its deliberateness
in spots. Yeah,
so, yeah, and how, you know, the style, and I really think that the sort of timelessness of it or retro-ness of it is not trying to clue us in into the time period, but it's another intentional way that they're trying to just keep things off balance or keep us disoriented.
And like I said, it's a good way because you go back and watch The Matrix, which was made in 1999, and it still looks the bit like the tech, other than this cell phone technology, you know, it still looks like it's like retro future cool. Or you compare that to, like, Stargate, which came out, you know, 5 years before that. And, like, when you go into the Stargate room and they got all these computers hooked up to it. I remember back in the day, that seemed like it was fucking NASA. Mm-hmm. And now you look at it and it's like, oh, my God, these old-ass CRT monitors and all this these clunky things. And no one foresaw touchscreen technology. And
right.
So it might just be a way of just making this, you know, 30 years from now, it's going to look just as retro future cool as it does today.
It's almost like a fable or something. So what else about the style?
Can we talk about the style of not wearing sleeves with your gloves?
Right.
Like, this is something that Rey brought to fashion in The Force Awakens, and I continue to not understand the gloves, the sleeveless tunic with gloves. If I am concerned about people touching my bare skin, uh-huh. why would I bear my bicep region? Like, that's prime. Like, when I bump up against someone accidentally,
uh-huh.
95% of the time it's in the shoulder bicep area. That's where you're widest at the part as a human body.
I would basically never say this, but she's asking for it. She's asking to swap bodies.
She's asking to body swap. She is. She's begging for it.
She gets close to people too.
Right. Within arm's reach. Like, what if you just have someone who's used to being all touchy-feely?
Or yeah, like a dude's just jogging by in a tank top and he jostles you, bam, you just Freaky Friday'd him.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
She wants it.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it is terrible. But what I'm saying is it's just like in The Walking Dead. I'm always like, why isn't everyone wearing like leather biker jackets or Carhartt or thick denim?
Yeah.
Something you can't conceivably chew through, but no, they're running around in tank tops and wife beaters and t-shirts. Like dress for the occasion, man.
that absolutely is a comment on style, because it's where the style is and the aesthetics are more important than the practicality.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that she is a comic book character. Is that a nod to her costume, perhaps?
You know what? I mean, I feel like a lot of these characters are analogs, like, Melanie Bird, the leader of this group, mm-hmm. seems like Professor X to me. And
very much so, yeah.
This girl seems like Rogue. Her power's kind of close to Rogue, where if Rogue touches anybody, it's involuntary. She takes on their memories and gets their powers. They don't switch places, but it's similar.
Right. You can definitely squint and see the similarity. So there is not a direct one-to-one, except for perhaps like David himself.
Right. He is. About the David in the comics as a teenager. But we forgot, or I don't know if we forgot, but we didn't mention last episode that Syd Barrett was the name of one of the founders of, with Roger Waters.
Pink Floyd?
Pink Floyd, yeah. He was one of the founders, and he did a lot of acid and had many schizophrenic episodes.
That doesn't surprise me. Their music is pretty trippy.
Okay, my turn, number two. So I really enjoyed the whole concept of the Museum of David's Mind and how this guy, Potonomy, can enter the psychic landscape and find memories. And they did stuff like that in the comics a lot, going into the psychic landscape, but it was more trippy usually. It was like floating eyeballs and things like that. But I thought this was really cool. And some of the more interesting stuff that they explored, I thought, was everything with his dad, where he kept going back to that same childhood moment of his dad reading that creepy book, which said, to bed, the mother said, to bed, she said, the angry boy, his face turned red, his face turned red. And with a cry, he chopped her head. No bed, he said, and sticker snack, his mom was dead, dead, dead. Which begs the question, did he kill his mother?
Yeah, sick Jabberwocky reference too there. And also they simultaneously portray his father as a figure that causes him some distress, and yet also a figure who's provided him with a lot of fond memories as well, with specifically the stargazing.
Yeah, it seems like the only thing we know for sure is that there is a very rocky relationship with either one or both of his parents somewhere along the line, unless, like, here's the thing. I don't know how much of what we're seeing is a true memory.
Right. Like, even Potonomy doesn't know. He said, did your father really read you that book?
Right.
And he noticed there's, like, you know, speaking of the Matrix, the glitch that in his, some of his memories where, like, it just seems to, like, hiccup forward, implying that someone is tampering with his memories. Because Ptolemy is his name?
Potonomy.
Even he is like, this isn't a lapse in memory. You can tell when something's a natural lapse in memory. This is, I don't think he used the word artificial, but he said something else. So it does highly imply that, you know, his memories and whatnot are being tampered with.
Or somehow, not real. What else? And then they wanted to take him back to that whole scene in the apartment where he exploded everything, which also last episode, that really felt like a Matrix moment too, because he's in the middle of it and then all of a sudden it seems like he feels like he can control it.
Epic table flip.
But he did this episode, they just had flashes of it. He seemed uncomfortable with it, but I'm not sure whether he is conscious of what happened and just doesn't want to talk about it, so he's pretending, or he just can't go there.
It seems like at some point he certainly had a recollection of it, right? He did have a memory, whether he's just blocked access to that because it's too traumatic, or maybe, as Aaron said, like somebody is actively messing with his memory. He clearly, he doesn't want to go back there, or he can't go back there now, but at some point he could, like with his therapist.
Right.
And like we see a lot of flashbacks in the previous episode where, you know, he in my mind, in the language of cinema, is remembering that incident when he's talking to the interrogator. So,
well, do you think it has something to do with his giant amygdala? Because that's, if you don't know, that's a little gland in your brain that is associated with your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And like, is it, you know, some kind of, is that a side effect of his mutation? Or is it the fact that he's got an overdeveloped emotional state that allows, or that causes him to blank out or black out these memories? Essentially, it's like, you know, is it genetic or is it something that someone's doing externally?
Right. Or a combination, or at least a, physicality manifesting itself in his
brain.
That's
the other thing, like the enlarged amygdala. I'm wondering, is like, you know, are we still being too hasty saying that he doesn't have anything clinically wrong with him? Because that's a physical anomaly that could easily suggest, you know, emotional instability, etc., that could be diagnosable. I think it's my turn to round this up. I want to talk about the other science fiction influence, which is Star Trek II. Introduction to CD Alpha 5 eels that I'm assuming are going to be introduced into people's ear or nose holes, or perhaps belly buttons, a la The Matrix.
So many holes to choose from.
So many holes yeah, that a worm or a bug can crawl in through a human body.
Yep.
If you really think about it, you don't want to squick yourself out. You know, body horror is like one of my kryptonites. And any theories about where they're going with this? What is the eye going to use with his sister?
I think the SETI Alpha 5 is good. I would imagine it will be one of the holes up near the brain.
So you think this is going for like a mind control thing so that he can, you know, they're using her as bait, like, and not in like, we'll just torture Han Solo and Princess Leia until Luke comes, hears their psychic screams and comes running. More like bait, as if we'll take over her mind and make and bend her to our will.
So I wonder, this has gotten me on the train of thought, like, why is the eye there? The eye is presumably there for the interrogation of David, right?
Right.
And you would think that they would want to have people there whose powers might complement the goal that they're trying to achieve, that might be able to achieve that. So is it possible that these worms are somehow linked to his power and that he is able to see memories? Because you mentioned earlier that maybe he's the yellow-eyed, the demon with the yellow eyes.
I said it because I felt like there's a little bit of facial... I felt like there's a bit of facial resemblance in the flabby demon and then the eye.
As if maybe he's hunting him through his memories somehow.
Right.
And if he can get access to his sister's memories, he would have like some sort of indirect access to David's memories.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe be able to hunt him down easier. I don't know.
Melanie says early on the divisions were created by our government to track and study people like David and Sid, and the ones they can't control, they kill. So that at least gives a clue if she's right about what they intend to do with him, either control him or kill him. So maybe if they're in the business of controlling, maybe they'll do the same thing here.
And I also got the strong impression that, you know, this amnesia that has fallen over the mental complex, that's not them just not playing along with the sister. Like, I feel like that they have scrubbed all of these people's memories and records, almost like in a Men in Black fashion.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Maybe they all have an eel inside of them. Who knows?
Right. Because
why
they were
be
hanging out
the
there.
Eye?
Right.
Is there something with his eye? Does he have a weird eye?
He does have that, what they call that, monochromatic, or...
Right, two different eye colors.
Yeah, he's got like a green and a blue eye.
But I mean, I guess that's enough to earn you the nickname, but...
The eye, right? Or why don't they call him eyes, you know? Right. Crazy eyes.
Well, they don't use that
word. That's already copyrighted Orange and New Black, so...
Yeah, it might key into some power that he has, right?
Yeah. I think we're just learning about a lot of powers. Speaking of which, my number three here, or my number one, rather, did we see a new power from David? Because there's a moment where he's talking with Sid, and he hears her say something, And it almost made me think that he could read her mind. And I don't know if this is part of his powers, if this is part of like some link they have since they body swapped, if he's just hearing her in another time or a different distant memory.
Didn't Professor X say that he was a telepath and potentially like,
right, and potentially telekinetic? Or
yeah,
she said telekinetic. I don't know if she said telepath, but it was mentioned at some point. Yeah, and it seems like he is.
Right. So I'm wondering if he can read people's minds as well.
Well, she denied saying that, so there's another possibility, which
but she had a look on her face, which was like, I didn't say it, but I thought it.
I think she just said no because she was rejecting the whole idea of him getting into her head. That's what I thought.
That's such a weird thing for people hanging out in a mutant complex to do.
Right.
Like, that's something you do if you're a normal. Like, how can you be in my head? You know, this is not real. But like,
no,
if someone is taking you on a guided tour through your own brain's imagery, I feel like, hey, you know what? We can probably discuss openly the idea of me reading your mind.
It's an issue in the comics, though, like Jean Grey. Some people who in the X-Men who don't know her that well be like, are you in my head right now? Like, they're just kind of paranoid, you know, about it.
Well, I mean, even if I accepted the truth of someone reading my mind, that would still make me very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the thing. Like, I feel like the way society, everyone has to be telepaths or no one does. Because if only, like, there was 1%, we would hunt those people down and kill them because they're too close. They know
but
all
they
of
would,
them.
They would know you're going to do that, and they just kill you.
Then that's where the tinfoil helmets come in.
Oh yeah,
Jim. If you could take a tour through the landscape of Aaron's mind, would you go for it?
Oh no way, no way, man.
This man treats intimacy like a hot stove. He's going to crawl in my brain. No
I bet
way.
Aaron would love to get in my head, though. That greasy bastard.
I just feel like it would It would look like the Qbert board. It's just all these CGI cubes that have things, and they're all have 100 locks on them. So
some squigglies.
It wouldn't do me. There'd be a snake jumping around. There might be some Marble Madness villains in there too, like, you know, the evil marble and the acid dissolving puddle and who knows what. His mental defenses would be formidable, I'm sure.
Yep.
All right. Is it my turn? I think it is.
I think so.
So we've talked about a lot of this, but there were just so many different ways of keeping us disoriented in this episode. And you know, last episode, I think we all felt, I hope it gets a little more grounded next time. And I think it did. And even so, there's still that disorientation, but I think they found a really good balance. I actually wanted to ask you guys, last week we were complaining about it not like connecting emotionally enough. Do you think it improved?
I think so. I think that Rachel Heller, is that her name?
Yeah.
Keller?
Yeah.
I think she has a pretty good character, and I think she's doing a lot to bring some emotional thunder here. That you can see that those two have a connection outside of just the mission, and I think that's starting to connect.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's certainly underwritten, but you know, again, they're relying on these characters' natural chemistry, which remains pretty pretty crazy high, and the fact that they're likable and they're telling us that, you know. So I want to check in with you. Like, you were questioning whether her affection for him was genuine last episode, I think, Jim. Mm-hmm. I definitely got the episode in this that she does, you know, I don't want to throw around loaded terms like love. I'm a guy after all. But like, I feel like that she does love him at this point, and she doesn't want him to be hurt, doesn't want him to go away. And wants to get some kind of what they call it, a romance of the mind. Want to keep that going.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, I learned something new that I didn't realize last week. Maybe you guys did. But when they met in the mental institution, I thought she already had a connection with Melanie Bird and her people. But this episode, she said that that when that power exchange or body exchange and flash of power happened, that's what keyed them in, and they thought they were getting David, but they got her. So it made it seem like that was their first encounter with her.
And so then, why did she say that she came for him? Do we understand that to be that?
Well, she came for him when he was in the facility being interrogated.
Yeah.
Right.
After the okay. which, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, because I kind of assumed that she was talking about like her entire mission stretching back to when they first met, mm-hmm. but I guess, you know, like I said, this seems to have definitely remapped that continuity.
Which also sort of fits in with Empire Strikes Back, because I always thought it was ridiculous that Luke Skywalker was trained in the Force during the same amount of time it took Leia and Han to go to Cloud City and get captured or whatever.
Their hyperdrive is busted, man. That was a slow boat to Bespin, man.
It took months.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was no longer the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy. It was just a hunk of junk in the galaxy.
So many ways of keeping us disoriented. One of my favorites was they introduced this whole thing about the mental museum and him taking him around to different memories. But then they started going into the memories and didn't show them watching. And I wasn't clear if it was just flashbacks or it was still doing this until over halfway through the episode during the whole frog vaporizer scene. All of a sudden you hear, I think it was Melanie say freeze, and they're there watching. And then I'm like, I had forgotten about that. And I'm like, oh yeah, I guess they've been watching all these flashbacks. So mm-hmm. I thought it was a really cool way to do flashbacks. Also the scary demon thing, yellow eyed, whatever, was always there on the periphery. And I think my favorite scene of the whole episode was when that therapist, Dr. Poole, he was talking to David about looking at the stars with his dad and that the stars could talk to him. And then he asked, you know, what did they say? And all of a sudden things got really tense and the closet door opens with a creak and you hear whispers and devilish demon sounds. And I just thought it was great that they could create that much tension so suddenly and just because of a closet door opening. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really effective. The whole Carrie thing I really liked. And if you looked up, I did on IMDb, it's Carry and Kerry and their father and son, our father and daughter, which is weird that the father and daughter would have the same.
Oh, no. Okay.
They
I thought
the
it was
same last name anyway.
They did. They yeah. they had the Loudermilk or whatever. I just assumed that was another crazy coincidence.
There were a bunch of other things, but I'm just continually enjoying not totally being sure what's real and what's not.
We saw the Carrie, the one who's practicing Kung Fu in the background, previous episode. Do we have any idea of what her powers are? Is she the pyro person? Or because somebody set the air on fire, and we know it's not the
right.
the Ptolemy? Mm-hmm. Pterodactyl?
Yeah, the memory artist.
Yeah. Pompeii, it's not him. It's not Sid, because her powers is swapping powers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So is by process of elimination, she's the pyromancer, or whatever you would call it, the mutant version of that?
Could be.
Why train so hard if you got fire powers?
I don't know.
I wouldn't be.
They all got to learn how to fight.
Got
to
keep in shape somewhere.
I guess, but that's not going to make the difference in a fight.
No. But your conditioning might, you know.
Maybe.
In the fight against diabetes and obesity.
Sure. the real fight.
That's a fight I'm losing every day. I should go and start hitting sticks, man.
It is weird. Ptolemy is pronounced Ptolemy, but Ptonomy apparently is pronounced Ptonomy. That's the way they say it in the show. But I liked the guy. I thought he was a good character.
He's a very arresting character. He reminds me a lot of Chiwetel Ejiofor. Mm-hmm. Like into his kind of, he can play warm, he can play grave and intellectual, and he's kind of like got both of those sides. Like right. He kind of felt cold when he was just the memory master walking him through his memories. But then I thought, like, you know, when they were sitting there sharing a glass of milk with the goat on the hill doing talk therapy, that he seemed like a really cool guy that you'd want to get maybe not a milk with, but a beer with. But yeah, he's got a really cool, he's got a really nice presence to him.
Solid. Yeah. Solid. His power, you know, they said he remembers being in the womb and he remembers everything. And it reminded me of this episode of This American Life I saw recently or heard where they talked to people who are like that, for some reason, they remember everything as if it just happened. And it was, you know, like
they don't remember their births though. I call bullshit
no,
on that.
No, okay. they don't remember that far back, but
okay.
They talked
the didactic memory, is that what they call it?
I guess so. I think
photographic
so.
Memory.
And it sounded like a blessing and a curse because you don't lose your keys or anything, but you can remember, you know, like it's hard to stay in relationships because every transgression is like it just happened and it's hard not to hold a grudge. So I don't know if I'd want that.
I would imagine. That does sound like another Black Mirror episode.
Black Mirror was awesome this season, I thought.
I haven't seen season 3 yet. Or oh, I haven't man. Seen all of it. I've seen like 3 of the episodes.
The last the episode whole... is really good. Oh, anything man. Else on this?
I don't think I have anything.
Nope.
Did you guys like it? Seemed like
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did. Totally. I did. All right, cool. Let's get into listener feedback. I'll go first. Laura Willie Swink says, doesn't mean I like the episode if I watched it with a big fucking grin the entire time.
Yep. Maybe you just have a huge amygdala and it's just out of control grinning.
Are you sure the TV was on? So it says, more straightforward and grounded than the pilot, and I miss all the great music, but I love getting so many answers, like the smoking frog, the mysterious Dr. Poole, and what I had suspected from the last episode, that Lenny is a lesbian or bisexual and was a friend of David's from before Clockworks. I'm really afraid that we'll find out that David's father was an abusive monster, and his memories are trying to cover that up. I hope it won't be that obvious, but it seems to be where the story is going now.
Yeah, I was actually wondering if maybe David's father is the demon with the yellow eyes.
Because
we never see his face. And you had mentioned, oh, there are some similarities with the facial structure of the demon and the eye.
He's like an inverse yellow bastard from Sin City. He's the father, not the son.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to go to Rima Joe.
Go for it. Rima Joe.
Rima Joe. I'm wondering where I can get one of those frogs. Well, I know a guy who knows a guy who blew a frog. B-L-U-E. Get your mind out of the gutter.
I can guarantee there's already one on Etsy.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. Totally. So, yeah. I don't know. I'd to get over to Etsy. You got to fire up the darknet.
Yep.
Carrie. The only part of the premiere I can't understand is how David's physical body got out of the hospital. It seems like he and Sydney exchange their minds Freaky Friday style, with their powers staying with their physical body. We see David and Sydney's body out of the hospital, and here's Sydney and David's body behind the wall. Next thing is David's body is outside with her suitcase. How did that happen? Please explain. Is that... I guess I took that as, like, that's from his point of view. Right?
I think the way her power works is when she touches somebody, probably the minds switch places. But then after some amount of time, the bodies switch. Because she, they thought they had him in their car, and all of a sudden you see her back there, and he's sitting at in her body, he's sitting at a table outside somewhere. And then you hear a voice. It's his mother saying, David, where are you? And that's right when all of a sudden I think something passes in front of the camera, and then it's him sitting there. So I think the body.
I thought that was a stylistic convention. The actual switching of bodies. Wow, that would be wild.
Maybe I mean, it's possible because we know that they are now once again in their correct bodies, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I thought it was a stylistic thing too, but then I started thinking about it like, well, we know that he left in her body and now he's in his.
Mhm.
So.
Yeah, you're right. And it's like you said, if they thought they had him, it
right.
wouldn't be her.
Right.
Unless they're way more incompetent than they wanted to believe.
Way more.
Yeah.
He looks like a girl, but whatever.
Uh-huh.
All right, cool. Thanks, Carrie and everybody else. Now it's time for news about Legion. I'm just going to read it because there aren't really anything spoilery this time. Nothing spoilery. So first thing, Legion's ratings were actually pretty decent on a live +3 basis. So that means the first night plus people watching it 3 days later, time shifted. It had 1.8 million adults 18 to 49 and 3.27 million total. So of the 69 new primetime cable drama premieres over the past year, Legion was number 3 in the 18 to 49 group and number 7 in total viewers.
That's actually quite a bit higher than Fargo, I want to say, at least season 1 of Fargo. Definitely season 2 of Fargo. Wow, that's I'm surprised. I thought Fargo would be a bigger draw, but I guess the pop culture is obsessed with comic books right now.
Yeah.
Although I was not even until 2 or 3 weeks ago, I did not know that Legion was an X-Men spinoff. So I wonder how many people just tuned in because it looks like a trippy, you know, kind of crazy little thing.
Right. And maybe there's at least some, you know, benefit to him having proved himself on Fargo. So bringing over a lot of that audience plus another audience.
The Fargo came back and then you had all the Comic-Con people coming.
And I'm both.
exactly.
So cool. All right. Next, Jeremy Harris, who plays Ptonomy, the memory artist, did an interview. Just a couple of things I thought were interesting. They asked him, once you got the role, how are his powers described to you? He says, Noah Hawley said you could think of it as being able to remember everything as something that's really cool and fun. But he wanted me to think about how it can be a burden as well and about how difficult it could be and how challenging and complex to remember every single thing that happened in your life. Not just like I won't ever forget where my keys are, but how it feels to remember traumatic things that may have happened in your life and never forget them. Kind of what I was talking about earlier.
Yep.
Okay, next. So a little bit about Noah Hawley. I'm impressed with him. He's a super busy guy. He's the showrunner of Fargo, which starts up again in April. I actually didn't know the ratings went down in the second season. I'm kind of bummed to hear that. He also will write and executive produce a limited series adaptation of Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle for FX. Mm-hmm. He will executive produce but not write for 2 more adaptations, Hellhound on His Trail, based on the novel, and The Hot Rock, also based on a book, both for FX. Executive producing, sometimes that doesn't mean anything, but anyway, he's written 5 novels, the latest of which, Before the Fall, was released to critical raves this summer. It's a mystery that skewers a Fox News like network, and that's been optioned for a movie by Sony, and he's writing the screenplay, Hawley. And in September 2014, he signed a deal with Universal Pictures to script an untitled project for their classic monster franchise. And he's set to make his feature film directorial debut with Man Alive from a sci-fi spec script by first-time screenwriter Joe Greenberg. So he's got so much on his plate. I don't understand how
is that latter connected? Is that latter title connected with the classic horror film thing?
I don't think so.
Okay, because I'm like, Man Alive, what would that be?
Yeah, is that sci-fi? Is what you said?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, he's probably doing like Frankenstein or something. Who knows?
Right. Well, Frankenstein could be described as Man Alive.
Yeah, that's true.
He was a dead man, now he's alive.
And then I think this is the last thing, yeah. So this is a couple excerpts from an interview with Dan Stevens, who plays David from Vulture.com. They said, I understand you spoke with people who live with schizophrenia and doctors who treat it while you were researching the role. What was the most interesting thing you learned from those conversations? He says, one of the fascinating things you learn when you talk to paranoid schizophrenics is they experience a sort of fantasy realm, a realm of the unreal. But to them, all of those realms are quite real. There's a harsh reality to them that most people don't see. And so I was trying to give equal belief / disbelief to all sorts of different scenarios. So there's a certain scenes where it's very clearly reality and David should know that, but is not so trusting of that. And there are others which are clearly fantastical and bizarre, and he's taking them quite literally and seriously and everything in between. And then talking about some conversations with Noah Hawley, he says, we talked about a lot of influences and passions, and a lot of those things have poured into Legion. We discovered that we both liked Wes Anderson, which you guys mentioned last time. We both liked Kubrick, Clockwork Orange, but also Lindsay Anderson's film, If, which was Malcolm McDowell's first movie. I don't know about that one. And then last, they asked him, what was the hardest word to do in the American accent? He says, Twizzler. It's one of the first words I have to say in the show, and I was terrified of saying it.
Is that because they mispronounce Z as Z? It's the double Z. It's like, you know, he can't quite bring it off as a Brit.
But you don't have to say the letters. You have to say
perfect,
the word.
Perfect American accent. He just kept saying twiz-zed-zed-ler. Yeah. He couldn't get it.
Twizzler. That's Twizzla. The good one. Twizzla.
Right.
All right, guys. That's another one in the books. We're doing pretty good, too. I see we're up in the top 10 in the TV section.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Kicking cool. ass, taking names.
So if you people would like to get in touch with us, you can email us at legion@ballmove.com.
And you can also find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out all of our other shows at baldmove.com and podcast.com.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Listening, everybody.
See you next week.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.